This podcast is brought to you in part by JFQ Lending. With interest rates below 3%, there has never been a better time to lock in a low fixed interest rate on your mortgage. You'll never need to think about refinancing again. Set it and forget it. And with JFQ Lending, you are guaranteed to get the highest level of customer service. They have an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau and over 3,000 five-star reviews. Give Jared Ritter a call today at 480-637-7979 or email Jared directly at jritter@jfqlending.com. JFQ Lending Incorporated, Equal Access Lender, licensed in over 40 states, www.jfqlending.com.
Notre Dame football and 60 minutes of hell.
It would be Lou Samoji, because I know Lou would do a great job with the special teams.
I don't know. Every time I'm out on the field, I just want to just be dominant.
One thing we always say is we need to dominate the obvious situation.
I'm just back in Notre Dame. Oh, picks.
Man.
The Irish to win. Yeah.
I just feel thankful to be in the ACC, be able to be playing, obviously.
And it still doesn't mean I can't have a Mai Tai in July on the beach. So I'm not lying.
Welcome to the Irish Huddle Podcast. I'm Patrick Engel, joined by Lou Samoji. We have an unexpected free weekend. Notre Dame's game at Wake Forest, scheduled for September 26th. It's postponed until December 12th because of an outbreak in coronavirus cases and personnel losses due to contact tracing among Notre Dame's team. And the news, of course, was shocking to, you know, a lot of people, or at least like, oh, well, you didn't think it would hit Notre Dame because of how well it handled this until now, when it's, you know, a real thing that they have to deal with. But just to, you know, appreciate the rarity of a Notre Dame game getting postponed, this is the third time it's happened in the last 100 years, right, Lou? I mean, it's been a long time, and this is doesn't happen.
Yeah, if you exclude Newt Rockne's first season in 1918, when you had the Spanish flu epidemic there, Notre Dame played only six games that year because the entire October schedule was wiped out. Overall, that epidemic was much worse than this one because you were getting into deaths in the millions there. But then, of course, you had John F. Kennedy's assassination. It was on a Friday afternoon, the day before Notre Dame was supposed to play at the University of Iowa for its senior day. And Notre Dame actually did get on the plane and flew to Iowa, because at that time, the school president, Father Hesburgh, was in a meeting in Boulder, Colorado, a science meeting. And it was around 12:30 a.m. on Saturday morning that he just said, no, there's not going to be any game played, because both Moose Kraus and Forrest Evashevsky, the athletic directors, they met on Friday evening and said, okay, let's go ahead and proceed with the game. But Father Hesburgh vetoed it, and he was a close friend of President Kennedy as well. There were still some college football games played that day, though. Oklahoma, Nebraska, for example, that was for the Big Eight, back then it was the Big Eight championship, when there were actually eight teams in the conference. I imagine that. And and the NFL also played the next day, and that was greeted with a lot of controversy as well. And the other more recently was the 9/11 terrorist attacks, September 11th, 2001. Notre Dame had been scheduled to play Purdue on September 15th down there, but after that they decided to postpone it to December 1st. So yeah, it takes something really significant for something like this to occur.
And yeah, I think we can all agree now that we're in something significant for the foreseeable future. But anyway, you can follow us on Twitter at Patrick Engel _ENGEL. You can follow Lou at @BGI_loosemoji, SOMOGYI. The best way to support this podcast is to subscribe to blueandgold.com. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a review, rate our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching on YouTube, please like this video and subscribe to our YouTube channel. So, Lou, like you said, this is a significant thing, and we'll just go through the details of exactly what led to Notre Dame postponing its game at Wake Forest. So the school released on Monday that 10 players were in coronavirus protocols, whether that's positive tests or contact tracing. And none of those players played on Saturday. So if anything, that was a confirmation of, okay, there were 7 players held out of that game against South Florida with no prior reported injury issues. The school doesn't say if it's coronavirus or not. They just say, all right, unavailable. That's that. And you can read into that what you will, which is, okay, you can conclude that there is a better chance that those guys are caught up in it than someone else. But what really got this into motion was the tests that were released on Tuesday but conducted on Monday. That had 7 new positives and up to 23 players now in protocols for either isolation due to a positive test or quarantining through contact tracing. So that takes out about a 20% of the Notre Dame's roster. And of course, there's the matter of an outbreak on the team that hasn't been contained. And that's obviously the main focus. So that game moved to December 12th, did not even discuss the mutual open date they had on October 3rd, mainly because, I mean, I don't know, can you really feel confident that you'd be able to, one, get this under control, and two, once you do, even have the personnel, because, I mean, like you said, quarantine protocols, 14 days, that's going to take you out through that weekend. And what becomes a real issue is both, all right, well, do we have any bodies to, yeah, at certain positions? This is, you know, going to affect one position more than it will others, just going off of, you know, what we've seen prior teams deal with these things. I remember Oklahoma, I think it was, said it had an entire position group wiped out. LSU was down to 4 offensive linemen, I think, at one point during its August camp. So that's really what's led it to this point now, where Notre Dame is going 3 weeks in between games from September 19th against South Florida to, if all things are going well, October 10th when they host Florida State. So, Lou, let's just try to digest just what really happened here. I mean, what was your reaction to just seeing all of this unfold?
You know, it's earlier in the week, and after, I believe, the Duke game, it's like Jack Swarbrick. He shot the warning shot there, saying that, you know, look, we're not out of the woods. There's going to be interruptions. There's going to be cancellations. And, you know, you're feeling pretty good after those first 2 games. It's like, hey, maybe we're going to beat this after all. He maintained a level perspective about it. And sure enough, you know, we put that quote in the They Said It section last week, and it proved propitious for what you know, he pointed out. Now the question is, are you able to get in that full 11 game schedule? Because you had the October 3rd bye, you have one on November 21st, and then you had one on December 12th as well. Now the October 3rd one, that's not going to happen. So that's out now. It's like having 3 lifelines on, you know, these Who Wants to Be a Millionaire games and all. And now that October 3rd is used up, and now December 12th is used up as well, because that's going to be Wake Forest. Your last one potentially would be November 21st. And that was ideal because final exams for Notre Dame are going to be held from Monday, November 16th through Friday, November 20th. And at Notre Dame, traditionally, there's never been any athletic activity during finals week, not even practices. There would be like voluntary workouts, you know, again, using the voluntary in quote marks or so, as far as weight and strength conditioning based on your class schedule. But there would absolutely be no games and extremely little game preparation or game situation management among the team. If need be, maybe you could still use it November 21st, and then maybe move the November 27th game, which is a Friday at North Carolina, to Saturday, so that you don't lose that extra day. But that's, you hate to use it up after that second game, because now the margin of error is so small. And frankly, I just don't know how the Big Ten can play 8 consecutive weeks from October 24th to December 19th without having interruptions themselves. So we'll have an interview here with Pete Thamel there that you did from Yahoo Sports earlier, Patrick. Very good interview. And he had a phrase in there that pretty much summarized it: embrace the chaos. And I think everyone knew it was coming, but I think there was maybe an initial denial stage, especially after you were able to get in those first two games of the season. But then you look at a University of Houston, which has had like 4 straight games, and you're seeing these gradual cancellations or postponements anyway all around, and you just wonder whether you can get to that end of the season and play that full schedule.
So Lou, like you mentioned, yes, we will be joined here a little bit later on that will play my conversation with Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports. And one of the things I asked Pete was exactly about that ability to play a full game, 11 game or whatever game schedule you had. I mean, I'm skeptical the Big Ten's going to be able to get 9 straight weeks in, but nonetheless, stay tuned for that a little bit later on. And like you said about Jack Swarbrick, he wasn't surprised that there was a game canceled. At some point, they had to play, you know, schedule musical chairs or whatever. And it's already gone around the ACC anyway. I believe it was Duke had a game against Virginia. Or I can't remember the exact details, but both of them flipped other games to get on a bye week that was on the same week when it previously wasn't scheduled that way to accommodate some other switch. I can't remember the details off the top of my head. But anyway, that was one option used. But I don't think Jack Swarbrick, when he was saying that, had any idea that they're going to have a game canceled, going to have 2 weeks where, 2 weekends, I should say, where you can't play because of something that happened with your team, right? I don't think that was what he was really considering because of how they handled it in the first 2+ months since they came back in June. And I also think it's important to say that just because, all right, this was something you expected, it doesn't mean it's like, all right, hey, it's here. Just ignore it. Let's roll. Whatever. And yeah, there's going to be chaos, but at the same time, it's not just, all right, we've got chaos. Let's just keep rolling through. And I think both Brian Kelly touched on this when we last spoke to him on Monday. Where this is Friday, September 25th, as we're recording. And this even before the game was postponed. And he said, this is a thing that's constantly evolving. And what he's referring to there is their protocols for how often they test, what they do with keeping players apart as much as possible, or when they do have to allow contact, how they handle that, you know, the roommates situations, like all of these things, everything that has been done and really planned out from every detail here is some kind of decision, and every detail of practice or game day or what these guys are going to do when they're having meetings or outside of football related obligations. And all of those are constantly evolving things that aren't going to be set in stone once you make those calls over the summer, or once you set up your initial plan. Like, there's going to be things that go wrong, like Swarbrick said. And the idea isn't just to say, hey, it happened, but constantly re-examine what has to happen to deal with something like this that happened on your campus with your team. It's not like you can say, oh, Duke gave it to us, USF gave it to us, whatever. And I'm not speaking here with any information of, oh, yeah, I know how this is the outbreak started. But you can safely say that this was not something that, at least just given how the other two teams have handled it, like South Florida had no players test positive on Friday, the day before the game, that was transmitted onto to campus themselves. And another, just to touch on the same thing, the team doctor, Dr. Matt Leisler, when they first revealed this plan just to bring players back in the summer, he told a few outlets there, it's like building an airplane on the fly. It's going to be something that constantly evolves and constantly have to think about updating when it doesn't work like you thought it did. And I think you're certainly in that place right now.
How ironic is it also that when Notre Dame originally scheduled South Florida, I was thinking, oh my gosh, that's one of the worst areas as far as with this COVID-19. And I don't know if South Florida would also have the type of resources that where they could spend so much on testing and all, like, let's say a Power 5 team such as Notre Dame. So there's that initial trepidation about, boy, when South Florida comes up here, you know, where's the contact tracing? Is that going to affect Notre Dame in some way? Well, it's South Florida that eventually had to look into the contact tracing because Notre Dame had 7 players test positive. But just to be safe, they also canceled their game or postponed it against Florida Atlantic this weekend. For those reasons. So it was almost like a reversal of roles of where we initially thought it might be when the game was scheduled at the outset.
Yeah, and you can just see kind of the power of these decisions and what a one wayward situation does. I mean, now you have Notre Dame, Wake Forest, South Florida and Florida Atlantic all out of games this weekend because of Notre Dame's one issues. And I'm not trying to say this to belabor the point of, oh, Notre Dame, you massively screwed up. Of course, they're not the first team to have had something like this, and they certainly won't be the last, you would imagine. But nonetheless, it's the ripple effect and fast one that something like this can have. And like you said, here's what you don't do. I don't think you just assume it was the players who you can blame for doing something stupid or whatever, especially when, you know, if we take Brian Kelly at his word here that all summer and early on through this, they've been really good about being accountable and just using common sense of not doing things that will increase your risk of getting the virus and therein increase your risk of spreading it among your teammates and having teammates knocked out due to those protocols. And if it's the same principle of, I don't think you just look at this and say, and just rehash the, oh, it's the students. You're responsible for keeping this off campus and on the team by your decision-making. And really, I if we just kind of assume that for a minute, again, I have no information here on exactly what caused it or if there was some change in player behavior or whatever, but let's just assume that, yeah, we take Kelly at his word that they've been good about it, and that's continued to be the case. And yet somewhere along the line, this popped up, all while the campus itself had very little problems of it as the team issues started to come up. And it would be one thing if, all right, you saw this happening when the whole campus was struggling with it. It's not like you can even look at it and just from our perspective right now, obviously we're not the doctors who have coaches who have every log of every place a player has gone or whatever, but you can get this anywhere, even if it's a mundane activity. And you would certainly think, just based on the context of where all these cases popped up, that's the case, because like we said, we know it probably wasn't from South Florida considering their 0 positives on Friday. You don't think it's a massive thing that was on campus because those numbers are really low. Mm-hmm. So you get it to this point of not playing for 2 weeks, just not only because you don't have a lot of your guys available, but because you don't know where this came from. And that makes it harder to do what the most important thing is, which is figure out the source, get it all controlled, get everybody who needs to be isolated or quarantined into that, and then test the rest of your team until you have a clean test, right? So it's somewhere along the line, you just kind of see the hard nature of this to really avoid, even when all the other factors that you might worry about, at least in Notre Dame's case here, were not that big of concerns, meaning mainly the what's the campus trend like and what was the other team doing.
Yeah, the greatest concerns or fears are those of the unknown. You know, what do coaching staffs always preach is that control what you can control, and that, you know, coaches by nature want to be in control all the time. And this is the most frustrating part of this for everyone, is you can be told to, you know, wear the mask and keep the social distance, to wash hands. We hear it ad infinitum. And maybe if somewhere along the line, is it broken? Does the comfort level take over? Maybe that, okay, I think we've beat it. We've got it under control. Is there a complacency? I don't know if I see that necessarily, but I don't know. I don't have any inside information on parties or where there may be congregations that maybe were not the wisest to engage in. And who knows, maybe even in practices or whatever. It's just so frustrating not always having something tangible that you can point to and say, okay, this is what we have to fix. Now, when you had that initial scare in August where Father Jenkins warned that if this spike doesn't ebb, that there's going to be once again a shutdown on campus and everything will be online. And my gosh, for 2-3 weeks thereafter, the response was fantastic. It was like one of those scared straight type of features where it galvanized, it seemed, everyone on campus to be vigilant about everything. And I don't know if a couple of games maybe changed the perspective. I don't think it would have, but that's where the frustration is. You just don't getting to the bottom of it. And, you know, it's interesting, since that release on Monday, it was hinted at that there's going to be others coming out as well. And since then, there hasn't been any news released by Notre Dame as we speak.
And as of Friday afternoon, no, we have not heard anything. And you can kind of read into, you know, whatever you choose based on the school's dashboard. We know that the test was administered Wednesday. Like the team has taken that after all the news about, okay, postponement. All right, the 7 positives on Monday. The dashboard for Wednesday, the 23rd, shows 8 positive tests. And then this dashboard does include athlete tests. So for what that's worth, again, it doesn't tell you which of these are athletes or not, but you notice 8 tests on Wednesday when you know the team was getting another round of tests. And like you said, the number expected to grow, especially when you have some more positives, you probably got some more contact tracing situations in there as well. And yeah, you can look at it where, all right, what can we tweak? Which of our little things can we do? But yeah, it's hard to pin down where you have, all right, it's September 25th. It's been 23 days since the September 2nd day where you went back in person. And cases have been at a very minimal level on campus. So it's not like, all right, you can have all your players go online or whatever. And can you really tell them though at the same time? Like, again, this something in here just kind of suggests, yeah, it probably just came up somewhere. It's along the line, and at least in some of these, in a mundane regular activity. But yeah, in that, can you tell your players to not go to the grocery store or not go to Chipotle wearing your mask, standing on those stickers on the floor for social distancing? I doubt it, right? So it's a hard spot to be in for them if you're looking for lots of answers to tighten up and tweak things to try to prevent from getting here again, just as it is a hard thing to easily identify, all right, where does this happen? And who knows, maybe a couple hours after we're done recording this day, there's something that comes to light on what happened here. So that's what we know so far, or at least here's how we got here. But of course, where do you go from here is next, right? So let's get into that. But first, a word from our sponsor. Coming to Notre Dame, plan your stay at the Varsity Clubs by Diamond Resorts, decorated with a collection of Notre Dame memorabilia and located just 2 miles east of Notre Dame in the heart of shopping and restaurants. As a special deal for our Blue and Gold podcast listeners, use promo code ZVISG and you'll receive 15% off your reservation. Varsity Club suites offer a king bed with Diamond Resorts quality linens and amenities in every room, living area with a queen sleeper sofa, flat screen TVs, fully stocked kitchenette, and more. Relax as you lounge by the indoor pool, where you can swim indoors and see outdoors through glass walls and a screen room, play bocce ball or sit by one of the fire pits in the beautiful outdoor courtyard, or shoot pool with your friends, and enjoy breakfast on us. Book your stay today at www.diamondresortsandhotels.com or call 800-438-2929. Mention promo code ZVISG and receive 15% off your stay at Varsity Clubs. So Lou, just looking into the wording of the statement that Notre Dame put out on Tuesday announcing those new 7 positive tests, you can kind of notice what wasn't there. And when you compare it to Monday's of the 10 guys who were in the protocols, they said none of those 10 guys played in the Saturday game. The 7 new positives, though, that wasn't mentioned. So you can at least infer, if not assume, that the 7 players who tested positive on Tuesday, or the results were tested positive, released on Tuesday, played in Saturday's game, or at least on the, they were in the stadium, right? And I think it's also important to note there that St. Joseph County Deputy Health Officer Mark Fox, who's been consulted in all of these team decisions, told local TV WSBT it's unlikely they were contagious at that point in the game because they tested negative on Friday. But nonetheless, you had guys there that were, they had the virus, right? They were infected. And so to me, if you're trying to figure out how do you prevent this situation from happening, is how to lessen the chance that you have guys go out there with who have the virus and were infected. And really, I think what you kind of look at is two things. And are you testing enough? I mean, you've heard they do daily testing for some guys. Can you do that for all of them? What do you do with, I mean, these guys have roommates on campus. Is that something where you kind of split them up? Because that's a lot of time you spend with a roommate who might have it. You just kind of think and assume, right? If my roommate has a virus, I'm probably getting quarantined through contact tracing. And of course, the biggest thing before you even think about locking in, like, yes, we're playing Florida State, is, all right, get to the bottom of it, see if you can figure out where things came from, get everyone who's been affected into the protocols, and then get a clean test of everyone who's not. And then you start practicing and figure out, okay, yeah, we'll be able to go for Florida State on October 10th, or you will have this much time before we do. So that's kind of your immediate what's next and what can you potentially tweak if you're Notre Dame, just kind of reacting to where this has put you.
As you mentioned, there are positions, and that's specifically the offensive line and defensive line, that are tested daily because those are high contact, close distance plays there. Maybe the quarterback can be a little bit isolated from, being protected or having a pocket around him. But I think back to Baltimore Ravens coach John Harbaugh and, you know, all these mandates being put. And it's what he said was, this is humanly impossible for a football game. You know, I see rules here, like even in Pee Wee football or Little League football, where, yeah, you're going to be knocking each other around, but after the game, you're not allowed to shake hands. That just strikes me as just so odd with these different type of rules. And football, whether you're a lineman or whether you're playing press coverage as a cornerback against a wide receiver, that there's going to be that constant contact. And some of those contacts are going to be pretty vicious too in the open field. So when you're just testing one group, which, you know, with the linemen, you're going to be engaging daily in that type of work where you are in close contact, maybe in receiving or 7-on-7 drills or 1-on-1 drills. It's not quite that way. Of course, the way people talk about Notre Dame being able to get separation at wide receiver, I think there's maybe more fear about maybe there's too much close distance between everyone. But I'm flummoxed. I don't know what the answers are here as to what you can do daily, because you're testing the linemen daily. It seemed that was fine as far as availability, other than I think Oviogbo, the defensive line against South Florida. But beyond that, it's always a mystery.
And yeah, like you said, I mean, we're not here trying to, hey, Notre Dame, Dr. Leisler, Brian Kelly, take our suggestions, right? I mean, this is just, you know, I've at least tried to make it, you know, clear earlier on that, all right, this isn't do this, but hey, these might be situations where that were part of your plan or decisions you made that, okay, it's perhaps these are worth reexamining to see if they contributed to the position you're in now, right? And but here's, at least in the next few weeks, what I'd look at it is that any practice you get before the week of the Florida State game is a bonus. I mean, because we haven't heard anything about them resuming yet. And once they released the tests, or the Tuesday positive results, or to us on Tuesday, sorry, Monday positive results, then they still said they were identifying contact tracing. And just, again, if you're to read into that dashboard and the assumption that, no, that 23 players in protocol for coronavirus are going to go up, you still have to make sure you get a handle on it before you start practicing. So that's the why it's probably just going to take a little while to return to practice. And that, I mean, you're certainly not looking at these 3 weeks in between games as, oh, hey, we can catch up on all of this, or it's a great time for, you know, there's chemistry for Ian Book to build with his new receivers, or more time for the linemen to learn how to block the outside zone stuff they want to do. I mean, no, not really, right? This, you don't know how much of this extra time you're actually going to get to use for practice, or even when you do. All right, what are your personnel losses who are going to be in the protocols until after October 3rd, presumably for a lot of them, right? And I guess it is, though, important to note that at least on the South Florida front, even though, yes, it canceled the game, Jeff Scott said it had a small number of positives, Jeff Scott being the South Florida coach. Of course, you have no idea where those came from, even though you can say, yes, our team tested negative on Friday. Yes, our team tested negative on Monday. Now we have them. I mean, still, you can't quite pin it on, like, the game, right? So I'd be surprised if they're able to get back into practice until, I don't know, mid next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm not sure. So we will go now to our guest, Pete Thamel, who can bring some more insight in light of what happened with this particular postponement, and just, you know, how this is being looked at just in college football as a whole, with how these kinds of situations have played out all around, and something what will be continue to be a theme that we probably see throughout this entire season. So here's my conversation with Yahoo Sports' Pete Thamel. I'm pleased to welcome in our guest, Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports, national college sports reporter, who I believe was the first to report that Notre Dame's Tuesday practice was called off and the game against Wake Forest was indeed postponed. So, Pete, thanks again for taking some time out of your day from texting all kinds of 50 sources on 10 phones with 10 hands to talk about this specific game.
Happy to do it, Patrick. Really, really appreciate you guys thinking about having me on today.
So let's just kind of go right into the Notre Dame kind of news of the week, or what will at least dominate the next 3 weeks of, you know, not having a game. And that's, of course, the game against Wake Forest, supposed to be in Winston-Salem, postponed until December 12th. So in learning and in reporting this, what's your understanding of the timeline of the events that got to that point and why it ultimately wasn't even considered to try to get it on that October 3rd date that was a mutual off week for both teams?
Well, this is dangerous because this is where a sports writer starts to play epidemiologist. And if they offer epidemiology courses at Syracuse, I can assure you I didn't take any. Essentially there's an easy answer to that question, and there's probably a much longer complicated one that I'm not equipped to give, but they did a big batch of tests on Monday. A number of those, I believe they said seven. It's been a few days and a few things have happened since then. Seven tested positive with contact tracing, et cetera. They canceled Tuesday practice. They were unwilling to go. If contact tracing is 14 days, it's pretty simple math. Like, you do 14 days from the Monday, you can't play for 2 weeks. So that is how I read it. Like no team doctor told me that or anything like that. But and look, it's Notre Dame. They're going to not enter any ethical medical gray areas. If they have to contact trace and sit guys for 14 days, they're going to sit guys for 14 days.
And so that game was already moved back, December 12th. And so the ACC put that December 12th, 19th, put the title game on either one just for extra postponements, but it doesn't really leave you a lot of wiggle room with other buys or other postponement games. And as we've seen already, that play out with some other ACC postponements. So is the expectation from folks you've talked to around the league, or even just in any league, is that this is going to be an uneven season with not everybody getting the same number of games because rescheduling is harder? I mean, we've in this Notre Dame's case, we've gotten two games in, and it's already had to use that December 12th kind of last case or last resort, easy schedule by week date to make up this game.
Yeah, uneven is a nice way to put it. It's a mess. The whole thing is chaos. It is going to be chaos from Central Arkansas, Austin Peay, all the way to whenever this thing ends. It is not going to be clean. It is not going to be neat. It's not going to be tidy. The only thing, Patrick, that you can guarantee is that it's going to be controversial, all right? Because you're going to have – Larry Scott said on the Pac-12 call last night, very subjective. You're going to have some teams playing six games, seven. You're going to have some playing double digits. You're going to have teams losing games, but minus key players. You're going to have, there's never equal sample sets because you talk about nine-game conference schedule, eight-game conference schedule, independence. But in this time, it is literally spaghetti thrown up against the wall. There is just going to be chaos for the college football playoff committee to sift through at the end of this.
So I want to touch on something you mentioned a little bit earlier when you talk about the contact tracing knocks you out for 14 days. And when you have 20 plus guys in the protocols and contact tracing being a big thing with where they have roommates and spending time with practice meetings and all of these things, you just kind of naturally spend time around with your teammates. In just kind of observing these postponement decisions across college football, is what you've gathered the main reason for postponements just lack of available bodies with so many caught in protocol for it, or just not wanting to be risk averse of, hey, we have this thing and we can't assume we're going to control it 5 days out or even 10 days out or anything like that?
It's a good question. I just think it's a little bit case by case, right? Like, some places just had massive outbreaks. In some states, the contact tracing is super strict. Like, we saw that with Illinois early on in the Big Ten before they got daily testing. In some places, they're kind of maneuvering, manipulating through contact tracing. I mean, it's almost like coaches are talking about it to me, Patrick. Like, they talk about recruiting rules. You can bump them a little bit here. Like, that's how that's going to happen. But contact tracing will determine who plays for the national title this year. There's no question about it. Either the lack of it, because you're like Ed Orgeron and your whole team's had it and you're framing that as a good thing, or the fact that it's manipulating your team and is going to prompt you to lose a game or two.
Yeah, the shameless versus the we've got this hitting our team at the worst possible time in the playoff dichotomy is something that seems like it's definitely going to pop up when you get to one of these major bowl games or a playoff game.
Yeah, and it's funny. What we're seeing now is like the initial – good behavior, people are breaking rank from in line, right? Human nature is coming into play, as we'd expect with college kids, right? It's original sin and drinking that, you know, are things coaching staffs fight. Usually just the repercussions aren't this punitive.
So you touched on daily testing with Illinois in the Big Ten, and that's being a big reason the Big Ten wanted to, or at least felt comfortable with coming back, and they got that in. I think the Pac-12 has had some kind of deal to have daily testing that's gotten that season and back off the ground in whatever limited form it takes on. In looking at the ACC, is from what you've gathered at all or discussions you've had, is that something that they're trying to do, or at least these, you know, rash of postponements has made them think about a little bit more, considering the NFL's success and, you know, at least what the getting two conferences that weren't comfortable with playing now at least trying to start a season?
Yeah. This is what I know. The NFL figured this out. The NFL just said, we're going to test every day. We are going to spend a ton of money, and our product is not going to be discernibly different on the field. Now, has it been perfect? No. But, like, the percentage of the NFL looking like the NFL of past years is much higher than college football looking like college football of past years. I think that's, like, that's a fair way to say it. The NFL clearly figured this out. Daily testing, and I had written this a bunch in the offseason, both with the NFL and otherwise, daily testing has always been the answer. Whether the ACC is going to get it or not, I don't know. That has not been indicated to me, but I would think at this point, if you are a league with the millions of dollars at stake, like, you'd be foolish to not be exploring every facet of daily testing.
And these games that have been postponed, or at least in the ACC's sake, or, I mean, Houston, who still hasn't played a game yet, and who knows when that's going to happen. It's probably one of those eye-opening things, right, that makes you think it's hard to do this not in a bubble without daily tests or frequent enough tests.
Yes. I have a hard time just imagining. If you are not testing daily as an athletic director and as a head coach, you are just walking on a high wire every single day you go to practice. Like, I was texting with a coach today who said, like, they basically have to teach players new positions today to play in a game Saturday. Like, it's just, it's like, that is college football right now in 2020 without daily rapid testing. And look, that's like there is a comfort, Patrick, with the uncomfortable that I did not think we would have in June when administrators were talking about this. There is just, people have embraced the chaos. They don't mind being the Miami Marlins right now. And that is something that I didn't think we would, when the Miami Marlins were happening and they were a laughingstock, I didn't think we'd get there in college football. And I was wrong about that.
So given that, what's the general feeling that you've sensed around the ACC for how this has gone so far, despite, I think it's, at least as of when we're talking, 4 postponed games involving ACC teams?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, the ACC is a particular mess compared to anyone else. Like, they're just kind of, this is what they signed up for. And nobody's thrilled about it, but I don't think anyone is casting it as this grand disappointment. This is just sort of like, gravity is taking place. The virus isn't going away. We all knew that. And the virus is going to continue to indelibly change this college football schedule and the ACC college football schedule.
And to kind of wrap up here, in looking at Notre Dame, who over the summer had 2 positives in about 2 months, and now this is really catching up to them in discussions just around college athletics in general. Have you sensed kind of a surprise or a, like, this is even happening here now when it had previously been a non-issue of kind of how this quickly got to this point for Notre Dame?
Sure. Well, it was a non-issue when there weren't students around. Now there's students around. So, I mean, it's pretty obvious, like, what the cause was. And I really think I credit the SEC the most, Patrick, because they just said, you know what, we're going to wait. We're going to let everybody trip all over themselves. We're going to let the technology catch up. We're going to let students come back. We're going to let the outbreaks, we're going to let the headlines go, and then we're going to start playing. Now, it's not going to be perfect for the SEC. And you can certainly ethically disagree with what appears to have happened there, which, you know, essentially many teams in that league have been infected. And now, is that a strategic advantage or not? That's certainly a conversation coaches are having behind the scenes. You know, there's no question about that. So I really think that, like, as strategies go right now, and things have changed and things are fluid and it's a rapidly evolving landscape, the SEC approach to me was the wisest approach, basically because it really considered in real time the impact of students coming back to campus.
Yeah, like you said, this is the spaghetti on a wall thing with all these different approach where, yeah, the SEC is going to let that be the mess that's initially there, the Big Ten and Pac-12 wanted nothing to do with it at all, at least until they got the testing figured out and the ACC was somewhere in between there, I guess. But yeah, I'm sure, of course, this is, you know, easier to follow than at least the last, 2 months or whatever it's been of the Big Ten and Pac-12 doing whatever they're going to do and going back and forth in every which way and every politician seemingly wanting to try to take credit for getting that thing back on track.
Yeah, I'm happy we're going to have a full slate of games on Saturday. I think that's the best way to sum that up. Like, yeah. I can't wait to write about coaches just coaching poorly. just like normal things to complain about, not governmental interference or health risks or cohorts or county governments or antigen versus PCR or any of the things that I've become a non-expert at in the past 3 months.
All while, of course, these games are, you know, Oklahoma smacking around Bobby Petrino's latest reclamation project or yes. Postponements as much as actually close games from one given weekend. Well, Pete, we appreciate you joining today, and thanks again for your time and your expertise here.
Yeah, Patrick, thanks for having me. I really, really appreciate it. Enjoy the next time the Irish play.
So some really good insight there from Pete on just looking at this season and all of these different methods of how teams are trying to get this done. And we'll dive into that for a little bit here, Lou, and just kind of discuss Pete's wisdom here. But first, a couple of words from our sponsors. Yesterday's Restaurant in Granger is a full-service restaurant serving some of the best food you will ever taste. At Yesterday's Restaurant, the philosophy is simple. Life is short, eat well. They believe that every meal should be a special occasion. That's why at Yesterday's, they serve only the finest organic and locally grown and produced vegetables, fruits, dairy, meats, and fish. They hand-make most of their delicious meals from scratch using only the finest ingredients available. Everything they serve is fresh and guaranteed delicious, and the recipes are unique and original. From prime rib, fresh fish, to the award-winning Great Scott Burger rated by ZZ Zippy as the number one hamburger in a 100-mile radius, you are sure to delight your taste buds. Yesterday's makes their desserts from scratch, fresh every day, including the world-famous Corbett cheesecake. Let the staff who love what they do make your Yesterday's restaurant experience outstanding. Visit us online at yesterdays-granger.com. Or book your reservation on OpenTable, or call 574-272-7017. Looking for that unique Notre Dame item for the Irish fan in your life? Visit Augie's Locker Room, the country's number one Notre Dame memorabilia shop. They have the largest selection of Notre Dame helmets dating all the way back to the turn of the century up until the present day, including the Shamrock Series helmet. They also have stadium benches, frame tickets, one-of-a-kind Rockne items, signed items, and many other unique pieces. If it is ND, they have what you're looking for. Visit them online at augieslockerroom.com or call 574-277-NDND. That's augieslockerroom.com. So, Lou, you listened to what Pete and I had to say. What were your kind of the biggest takeaways from just what you heard there?
Seem to really buy into the SEC approach. The SEC opens this weekend with what is going to be a 10-game conference schedule only. That was what Jack Swarbrick was talking about in August, is that let's give it about a month or more. This is in this case, because classes started on August 10th, if you were to start the season on September 26th, here was an opportunity to maybe begin it from here. We'll see how it works. I mean, and then you have Big Ten with 9, Pac-12 with 7. It seems the September 26th start was kind of the ideal time because you're dealing not so late like the Big Ten and Pac-12. You're going into October 24th there and then even November. Maybe not too soon, such as September 5th or even 12th, in the case of Notre Dame, kind of right in between, sort of that just right bowl of porridge or whatever for college football, if we may use that analogy. And it's also just all conference only as well, because this now gives an opportunity to expand and not just play an 8 or 9-game season in the league, and then 3 or 4 warm-up matches, but the chance to really prove yourself in the league with a condensed schedule that you are the best in the league and are worthy for that college football playoff berth. That's going to be the real chaos, I think, eventually is deciding on those four teams in college football. And like you said, it's embrace the chaos. You know, this is what you signed up for. Jack Swarbrick had his eyes open too. Even after the good start, he said, look, there's going to be interruptions. That's inevitable. But it's now how you are able to respond and deal with them and get in the maximum amount of games. This is truly, truly a day-to-day situation. We talk about that with injuries all the time. You have that nebulous phrase of he's day-to-day, which usually means he's not going to play on Saturday if he can help it, like with a Kyle Hamilton against South Florida. But it's day-to-day for each game during the week.
I think there's an important distinction to make with the SEC approach. When you look at the let's start later and just give it time to see if this is going to be a mess on campus or if this is just an even feasible, and the difference of what you've seen in a couple of these cases, like Ed Orgeron saying, yeah, our entire team has it. Like, the first one is prudent, I would say. Like, all right, you want as much time as possible to figure out what you need to do and things you need to enforce and changes you need to make with students on campus. And the second is just kind of shameless things. I wouldn't necessarily be proud of that, right? Like, if you're just saying before the, you know, even before the first game, yeah, most of our team has it. Like, you know, think whatever you want about the, you know, competitive advantage. Like, your entire team has the virus. I'm not really sure that that's something, or had, I should say, to be proud of, even though, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the numbers and there hasn't been anything out of LSU where anyone has so much even gone to the hospital. But nonetheless, I wouldn't exactly be like, if I'm Notre Dame, I'm thinking that, all right, the decision of when we started playing, how we handled this over the summer, and how it is, at least, even though you're at this point right now with a real problem, I'm still looking at that as, okay, we did a good job. Like, I wouldn't do anything different, right? Like, I maybe, sure, if you wanted the start of the season a couple of weeks later, whatever, but I don't think you can, you believe in Notre Dame, you look at some of these other teams that had outbreaks or let things run wild before the season or whatever. Like, I'm not really sure that's something that you'd want to have tried to even consider doing, right? Like, or Ed Orgeron just casually saying, yeah, most of our team had it. Like, hang on a minute. Like, that's still, like, a big deal. And even though, yeah, it's, again, you haven't heard of anyone having serious complications. And on LSU, you've heard about it across college football. And still, it's, you talk about there's an assumption of risk when you start playing this sport in this season. But I don't think there's an assumption that your entire roster is going to, or most of your entire roster is going to get this. I don't think that's the risk you're talking about here. Where, yeah, I mean, even Brian Kelly told us in the preseason, you're going to have good days and bad days, but none of those I can would think he's imagining as to the point where, yeah, before you played a game, most of you have had it. I think Texas Tech had a similar situation.
Yeah, and we've talked about with Houston. I mean, what a mess that is down there, where you've had like now four consecutive weeks where it just perpetuates itself, and it's something that you can't get under control. And SEC teams also, I think they're going to be among those that will be looking at those protocols of daily testing potentially, and being able to, I think the Big Ten will look at it too, because this is going to be an expensive proposition and not all schools can afford it. Maybe a Houston can't, and maybe there's problems also internally with the discipline or other things. I don't want to be making accusations, but we don't know with any of them. But we do know that with the Power Five conference teams, at least there might be some advantages in resources. Now, Notre Dame has as many resources perhaps as anyone, but you see that they still get affected as well.
Yeah, and just going back to what Pete said about the daily testing and what you touched on there, I mean, it's going to be harder sledding without that. And again, like, it isn't me trying to say, like, again, everything I know about this, I've read or Googled or been told through talking to smart people, isn't me trying to say, do this right now. But you can see the, if you're looking at the NFL, that has not had any hitches of postponed games and whatnot, the advantage that gets and just mitigating as much as possible exposure of positive cases to other players on your team or coaches and whatnot. And you saw it with Florida State and Mike Norvell, who the head coach tested positive. I mean, you can assume that he's not going around being stupid if he's preaching the same thing to his own team of, hey, we're going to get through this if only if we pay attention and be smart. But yeah, it's, and if the Big Ten is going to get through those 9 games in 9 weeks, I think that daily testing is going to be a big reason why, and why there weren't outbreaks if we get to mid-December and that's the case. So again, I don't know if the ACC is doing it. You heard Pete say the same thing, but anyone who's not, I think at least has to be exploring it if you can spend the money, which, I mean, you look at it like this. We have, like, if you're the ACC, all right, we have this much money at stake if we play all of our games as scheduled, the playoff happens, the New Year's Six happens, whatever. And that's what you can make. And again, I obviously, this isn't about this, but if you were to think about it from only a money like perspective, you can lose part of that, all of that, some of that, whatever, if you just want to take the risk of going on whatever plans you have and just hoping it works for the rest of the year. Or you can still make, I don't know, let's say you spend whatever it costs on more testing, but to still, like, would you basically, just to put arbitrary numbers out here, would you spend $800 million to still make $800 million? Yeah, I probably would, right? Like, again, if that's what your decision is coming down to, and if you're the ACC, and if that's a consideration, even, I think that's something that you at least look at, because I don't think you want to be the shameless one where, all right, you get to the point of late December and everybody's had it, right? Like, it's just not going to look great again, even if there are no serious player complications or whatever. And yeah, again, I don't think that's an assumption of risk you want to really be comfortable with when you're looking at a 3-4 month season.
Yeah, and look, college athletic departments always are under fire or scrutiny for overspending, whether it's with the arms war with the facilities or anything else, the coaching salaries, etc. And now all of a sudden you're cutting back university wise in so many areas, but then putting so much into expenses into these daily testing things. So that's another layer that administrators have to look at. I don't envy any of them as to what they're having to decide on, because you're deciding on jobs, you're deciding on resources, you're deciding on future as far as what can occur there with lawsuits or any other potential things along the line. So it's a full plate.
Well, as it stands now, we have the next couple of weekends open. So Lou, I mean, what are you going to do with what would have been a game coverage weekend? Are you going to watch some of the more higher volume of interesting games this weekend?
We have to have some topics and just look at the rest of the ACC. How are teams doing there? Who's maybe the top contenders for preventing that Clemson-Notre Dame matchup, hopefully on December 19th? The SEC, once they get back into their regular season mode, is there anybody emerging from that group? At least there's some discussion, which is better than no discussion at all with college football at this point. You take what you can. One of our better, you know, I want to say one of our best subscribers as far as message posts, BGI 2232, talked about years ago, he went on a trip to Cuba for a historical preservation society and was just, you know, taken aback by the changes there. But it's really an interesting country and all. And once you began to accept it and understand what it is, you could kind of actually enjoy it. And the same way, we're all strangers in a strange land right now with regard to college football and how it's going. But you just accept it as it is now, and who knows? Hopefully a year from now at this time, 2021, and I hope it doesn't last till 2022 there. But when you see the fans in the stands, the full capacity, and the players being able to run out to a full crowd with the marching band and everything, it's going to feel almost like a rebirth. But until then, this incubation period that we're undergoing right now is just something everyone has to deal with.
I mean, I can tell you, I'm still going to watch Florida State and Miami this weekend. I mean, there's still a degree of timelessness to that, right? So if you want something to at least give you some kind of intrigue of a normal year, hey, well, there you go. And I mean, there's the SEC and CBS. That probably feels somewhat normal for a Saturday. So yeah, you've got a lot of options for now. Like all of you listeners, like us, you have Saturday that's not going to be spent watching Notre Dame.
Yeah, this time last month, we were wondering there would be a season at all. You know, it's now going to be September 26th, and you've completed at least some slate of games in September. You're moving forward. You're pushing forward. And now it's next goal is October. It's going to be a long season because you're dealing with major college football games in mid-December during the regular season when – by that, it's usually bowl season. So it'll lend some intrigue during that month of December if we can just get to it.
Yeah, big if, but at least it means it's more football. And with the Big Ten and Pac-12 and Mountain West all coming back, it's more football. I think we've learned at this point to enjoy that while it's here, and certainly from this year. So we'll talk to you again next week. I'm not really sure when, because we'll have another bye week. But again, please rate, review, and subscribe. Leave us 5 stars and nice comments if you like what you heard. Smash that thumbs up button on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And again, follow us on Twitter at @PatrickEngel_@BGI_LoseEmoji. We'll see you next week. Till then, take care.